Are you ready to go offside? Because it's time for Offside Hockey Talk with your host, James Roberts, and myself, Doug Ireland.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is an awesome treat to be sitting down right now with none other than Mike Ross, the PA announcer, the voice you hear at the Toronto Maple Leaf games. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, the voice of the OJ, Doug Ireland. Doug, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And I just got to say what an honor it is to talk with a guy that does my job only much better for the team that I've been rooting for since I was a little kid. So happy to have you on here, Mike.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, we want to get into a few things here with you, basically about last year and things that are going to be coming up this year for the Maple Leafs and your role, obviously, with the team. But I want to backtrack just a little bit ago. You signed a new deal to stay on with the Maple Leafs. What all goes into signing that deal and what all goes into, I guess, leading up to that that piece of paper getting signed by you?
You know what? Every year has been a little bit different in the timing of it. So basically it's a year-to-year contract, and the team has tendered me not an offer per se, but the contract itself. And I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Basically they tell you that, you know, we want you to come back, and they send you the paperwork. I haven't had it go any other way. What has been different is this will be my fourth season, and each year it's coming later and later in the summer. So I don't know if that's just a matter of, you know, whoever's on holidays, or it's just become more of a formality in that they're happy with the job that I'm doing. They're confident in the job that I'm doing. But it's really mostly up to them. I mean, I can't really envision a scenario where I would go to them and say, hey, I'm not interested anymore. it's really up to them. And thankfully, you know, from my end, they've been happy with the job I've done and have asked me to come back for a fourth season.
Are there any pregame rituals or routines that you go to go through to get ready for a game for the Leafs? Is there like anything special you do?
I mean, I pretty much, it's the same routine every game. I tend to arrive at the rink anywhere from 2 to 2.5 hours before the game. And you know, every arena has its own sort of setup. Probably about half the announcers in the league sit at ice level. The other half sit up in the, either in the press box or at the press box level. So for us, I'm in a nice little soundproof booth next to the game presentation manager, the game caller, and the organist. And we're up in the press box level. And so I show up at my booth, and basically I just get set up. I mean, I've got a stat sheet that I keep my notes on throughout the game. I go through the roster for both teams to make sure that I'm good on all the pronunciations. And if there's anything I'm not clear on, then I'll do, you know, one of three things. I'll surf the YouTube and look for play-by-play calls, or there's also a website that a lot of the PA announcers in the league have sort of joined into, where we share our pronunciations of our team with the other guys. And so I can get it straight from their PA guy via the internet. Once I've gone through that, it's usually dinner time. We go down for a pregame dinner. And then from probably, if it were a 7 o'clock start, then probably around 10 to 6. From then on, we're doing tours. We have tours that come through pregame and come and visit with Jimmy Holmstrom, the famed organist from the Maple Leafs, who's going into his 31st season with the Leafs. And then they pop into my booth as well. And I like to, especially with the little kids, you plunk them down in the seat, give them a chance to get a picture sitting there at the mic and everything. So there's a lot of fan interaction before the game. And usually by about 10 to 7, then we all sort of hunker down and things get going.
Now, a question I have, there's a lot of players throughout the NHL and a lot of executives as well that have a way they enter the arena, they walk to where they're going, whether it's not walking past a visitor's dressing room or it's, you know, a certain way they walk every single time. Are you as superstitious as the players, or are you just free flowing and for you it doesn't matter?
That's a good question, actually. I like to think that I'm pretty free flowing, and it just some days I'll go downstairs because, you know, I want to grab a coffee. Other days, there have been times where I can think of one time, two seasons ago, where I walked down the hallway right by the Leafs dressing room, which is not something that I usually did, but I was going to grab a coffee, and Freddie Anderson crossed in front of me on his way out to the bench and for his pregame ritual. And I think that night he ended up getting a shutout. And I thought to myself, oh, man, now I gotta do that again. I got to be down there at the same time. And I have to do it all without Freddie figuring out that I did this. And anyway, it was just goofy and silly. But honestly, most of the time, I have the same entry point to the rink, and I follow the same walk. But if I want a coffee one day, or I want to, you know, something to eat or whatever, then I'll switch it up. I'm not that set. I really don't think that. I don't think the Leafs winning or losing has anything to do with where I get a coffee or don't get a coffee on a game day.
Well, Jack Eichel would be severely disappointed. You know, I don't know if you've heard of his regimental routine that he does every game day. So to hear that you're so free-flowing and aloof would probably send him into a fit. So, no,
well,
it's a good
what.
Thing,
I,
you know,
I
to
did
be
a
relaxed.
Radio show. I did a radio show when I was at NHL Network Radio with Phil Esposito. And Espo was about as superstitious as they get, all the way down to, like, you couldn't have sticks crossing each other in the room. He would freak out like it was some kind of, you know, horrible a sign from the beyond or something. I don't know, but he was intense. So I think Espo might have something to say if he heard me talking like that. But yeah, I just want to make sure I'm there on time. I want to make sure that I'm ready, and you know, that's probably the biggest ritual or the biggest part of the daily grind and daily ritual is just being at the rink on time, being prepared, having all your pronunciations ready to go, because once the puck drops, you know the skating is done by the guys down on the ice. You don't want to be skating trying to find information out. You want to be ready when the puck drops.
You know, speaking of curses, for better or for worse, what do you make out of the whole Drake and Bieber curse that seems to exist?
Listen, I'll tell you right now, there's a guy named Anthony Joshua who will tell you the Drake curse is real after he got sent back to London after taking that picture with Drake and many other teens. But then you look at the Raptors who just won, so yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, oh my goodness, this great curse, and it doesn't affect the Raptors, but it affects everything else he touches. Well, except his career. The fact is, he's done a pretty nice job at carving himself out a real nice career, and a nice brand and a nice business. So, I don't buy into those. I think we tend to sort of throw them up as almost defense mechanisms, but they're fun to certainly to read about and to discuss. There's no doubt.
Well, you know, I've noticed both of you guys didn't mention Mr. Justin Bieber in either of this. It's all about Drake. I mean, it's the Bieber curse, guys. Drake just showed up, okay? It's Justin Bieber is the one that causes the problems. Both years against Boston in the playoffs, CBC showed him up in the stands, and next thing you know, the Leafs are no longer playing hockey. I'm not saying it's his fault, but, I mean, Mike, you didn't walk by the same time for Freddie. That threw it off, and then Bieber. It's just too much. Too much. I have to wonder, though, doing this job and, you know, announcing, you know, Mark Savard, I don't know if you've heard about how fanatic he is about his tape job and how he goes after guys like Panarin and Pasternak for the way they tape their sticks. I'm wondering, are you a stickler for setup? I know Doug is. But do you need your mic set up a certain way, or if you see somebody else's setup done in a way that just kind of irks you, do you say something, think something, or if they turn their back, do you fix it? Or are you just, again, it's I'll go my own way?
I don't mess with anybody else's setup. And I don't critique anybody else's setup. If I find something interesting, I might ask, I might even steal, the idea. But generally I think for me, the biggest thing, if we're going to talk about superstitions and tape, for my score sheet and my roster sheet, I tape to my desk or my table in my booth. I don't want them moving during gameplay while I'm writing. I want them to be, you know, absolutely stationary and still. So when I tape down my game sheet and my roster sheet before the game, I'm really particular about the order in which I lay down the tape around the edges of the paper. Only because, well, for two things. Number one, I want to be able at the end of the game to pull off both sheets at the same time and not leave any tape on the table. That's just a weird
little
thing.
Things.
Yeah, it's just a little thing. And the other thing is that when I am taping, I don't like having any part of Brendan Shanahan's name covered up in tape. I don't know why. I think there may have been a game very early on where I taped over it and we lost, and I just never have taped over his name after
we
that. I do try to tape over the other team's executives if I can, but I will not tape over Brendan Shanahan's name. I don't know why. It's just probably just that one time, and it just stuck. So I do have some superstitions about tape, if that counts.
Well, I definitely get that. Like when you're in the middle of a game and you don't want to be scrambling, wondering like physically where something is that important.
Exactly.
Is.
Yeah.
How about, so over the summer, did you do any like not Leafs announcing gigs maybe that you want to talk about for a bit?
Wow. Over the summer? No. I mean, my summer routine usually means that I'm off work for a month. And we did a little bit of traveling, this summer. So no, I mean, I pretty much stayed away other than my day job at Accessible Media Inc. I wasn't anywhere near a microphone, till my vacation was done. So, I kept a pretty low key through the summer months. But
what about during the winter?
Well, yeah, during the winter we're a little busy. I mean, what's fun now about this time of year is all my buddies who have kids who play hockey. It's when I start getting the emails from them and their team rosters and asking me to record their kids' rosters so that they can play them at their games.
Oh yeah,
for their kids at the local rinks. So those have started coming in. I did my first one today, and those will start coming in over the next week or so. Those are always fun to do because, you see the, and you hear the stories about the faces on the kids, but the faces on the parents too, when they hear, you know, what has become a familiar voice to them through their love of the Maple Leafs, announcing their kid's name at their local rink. So that's, that's something I always look forward to at this time of year before we get into full swing.
Well, speaking of things looking forward to, you've had the honor of calling some great moments and milestones for players throughout the years for the Maple Leafs. You've been there for four. One of the sticks out to me is Ron Hainsey, obviously. But when you get the opportunity to do that, to call, you know, the 1,000th game and, you know, thank the player and do the introductions and all that kind of good stuff, what do you feel like? What is the emotion that goes for you? And is that something that you enjoy doing? Or do you feel it should be something that's not on the ice and done maybe separately as a private ceremony?
No, I like it the way we do it. I mean, every team has their sort of style when it comes to on-ice ceremonies and presentations. I think we knock it out of the park every time that we do something, right? And I think about whether it's a special ceremony with a guy like Hainsey who's playing his 1,000th game, you know, getting to see that silver stick up close before the game was just outstanding. I took, you know, 100 pictures of this of it. It was just so cool to see something like that up close. But to know that you're part of a really special moment for that player. And in a way, you're sort of drawing the fans into it. It's a good feeling. And watching, whether it's that, whether it's a welcome back for a former player, whether it's just noting something about a particular player on our team playing his 500th game or scoring his, you know, 500th career point. They're all very, very special moments, and every single one of them, it's an absolute honor to be a part of. And it's always a treat too when later on down the line you're surfing online or whatever, or the team puts out a tweet or something, and there's, you know, there's your call. I mean, it just happened to me a couple of weeks ago where the NHL put out, I think it was like a top 10 on opening night performances, and they had Matthews from last year, and they had one of my calls on an Austin Matthews goal. And I mean, hey, you're on Twitter, you're on Instagram, and you hear yourself over top of an NHL call on the NHL Instagram and Twitter feed. I mean, that's pretty cool. So yeah, I'm a big history buff, so I love the fact that we're part of history pretty much every night, but being a part of those types of events is even more special.
Is there any specific player that you like particularly like doing their call for, like just the way their name kind of sounds ringing through the rink that you enjoy calling?
I love Frederik Andersen. Probably because he's like the last name that we introduce in the starting lineup. And I mean, let's be honest, he's been so good that it gets a tremendous ovation from the crowd anyway, but the fact that it's the last name and I get a chance to really punch it out. Matthews, Nylander are always fun. One that's sort of surprising was the Nylander, because I don't even remember how I sort of came up with the way I do it, but you know, I draw out on the Nylander, and I had so many people coming up to me and saying, that's my favorite call. That is the my favorite call that you do is the Nylander call. So, you know, when last year when he had his contract issues going, I was kind of missing doing that call because I knew that so many people enjoyed it. So when he came back and I got that first opportunity to announce his name, it was kind of nice to be able to do it. And so that one definitely sticks out, just because I've had even colleagues come up to me and say that they really love when we do the introduction for William Nylander.
I think my favorite one that you do, and forgive me for the imitation, but I think it's Mitch Marner.
Yeah, that's another one that I definitely hear a lot about. In fact, just last week I ran into one of the beat writers in Toronto who said, you know, that even he'd been thinking about it lately and waiting for some news on Mitch because he wants to use that in the lead of his story. And so, you know, I don't know if I was lucky in coming up with them, or if I was lucky that we've got the players we have who've had some pretty terrific names and just sort of inspired me a little bit. I mean, with Matthews and Marner, Nylander, Andersen, even, you know, a name like Kasperi Kapanen. It's just a fun name to say. So from an announcer standpoint, you know, you don't necessarily have to dig very deep. You just they're fun names, and the personalities often sort of match their names too, which is kind of fun. Maybe you draw on that a little bit.
Well, this season, you're going to get the chance to call another player who used to be part of the heated rivalry between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators. Jason Spezza is coming to town. Mm-hmm. We all know that he'll probably become a Babcock toy and play a whole bunch of minutes. It seems to be the prevailing thought. But how fun is it going to be to say his name, not as a villain, but as a hero now if he scores a goal for the Maple Leafs?
I've been calling Jason Spezza's name since he was in junior hockey. So we go way. I've called him in the NHL before, and I called him back when he was in junior. So this is kind of cool. And I remember Jason coming into the NHL Network Radio studios one summer and spending about an hour or so with us. And he's just such a great guy. He's such an approachable guy. And, you know, you heard Tyler Seguin talk about him and call him a hockey nerd last week. And you know, I just think the guy just has such a love of the game. And he loves everything about the game. He thinks it. And I think that a veteran guy like that, I don't care what line of work they're in, when you can add someone with experience to your staff, to your roster, everybody benefits. Like, and that's one of the things that I think Mike Babcock has long driven into my head just through some of the things he said over the years, is you never ever stop learning. If you stop learning, then the tires basically stop spinning and you become a little bit sort of stuck in the mud. And I look at a guy like Spezza, and he strikes me as a guy who never wants to stop learning, but in turn also likes to teach and make sure that the other guys around him are learning as well. So I'm really excited. Local guy, again, I mean, this is something that we've had now for the three seasons I've been here. We've had local guys playing for the Maple Leafs and get another local product playing for the Leafs. And I'm really, really anxious for that first opportunity to introduce Jason Spezza.
Yeah, you got to think that that first game that Ottawa comes to town is going to be something a little special.
Oh, listen, and the thing is, for me, I mean, I was born in Ottawa, grew up a Maple Leaf fan in Ottawa, but then, you know, my radio career had me working for the Maple Leaf, or for the Ottawa Senators radio network, and eventually, Eventually, I made it back to the Maple Leafs. But you know, I've lived that rivalry, and I've been at both arenas in the most heated of playoff battles, and it just feels like something just hasn't been there necessarily the last couple of seasons. So, you know, if the departure of DJ Smith and Hainsey and Zaitsev, and our acquisition of a guy like Spezza and adding a guy like CeCe, if that feeds into that rivalry, I mean, that can only, you know, mean good things for the fans out there, because let's face it, hockey is a game that's always more exciting through rivalries. And yep. You know, there were times where that Battle of Ontario, I mean, it really was personal. It felt like we were going back to the days of, you know, the old Canadians and Maple Leafs rivalries in the 40s and 50s and 60s. So, I think everybody involved probably would welcome the opportunity to get that going again. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be interesting if those two teams end up making it to the playoffs and playing each other. Just the sheer amount of players from each team on either side now, and a player like Connor Brown that was kind of pushed down the lineup a little bit in the Maple Leafs, now may get a chance to be in the top six with the Ottawa Senators. It's going to be fun. And like you said, if it adds a little snarl, a little punch and pizzazz to it, why not? It's something that's needed. And who didn't like the Battle of Ontario, like you said? I mean, even Adam Sandler put out songs and different things, you know, about the Ottawa Senators and just the way it went. It was perfect for hockey. The games were good, and the gamesmanship within the games was pretty awesome. And I can only imagine calling the goals and being a part of it, the energy that we felt through that.
Well, I mean, you think back to those days. I mean, when I first covered the NHL, Dominic Hasek was playing goal for Buffalo. Curtis Joseph was in goal for the Maple Leafs. And, I mean, the Ottawa Senators at that time, they were continuously handled by both those guys in the playoffs and dispatched. I mean, it was just almost expected that year after year, if you ran into those guys, you were toast. And yet you still had these bitter, bitter battles that were so exciting. And the players didn't like each other. The fan bases didn't like each other. I think to some extent, maybe even some media members didn't like each other. So, you know, it can get pretty heated down there sometimes. And I know I experienced it. I've had three really exciting seasons with the Maple Leafs, and every year there's been growth there, and it's been so much fun to be a part of and to witness, you know, firsthand and be right there for all those home games and playoff games, and I'm looking forward to more this year.
Well, something you get to look forward to this year yet again is something new. You guys are going to Newfoundland for camp. Are you going to be joining the team when they go to Newfoundland?
I will be going out. I will be out there probably, I think it's 3 days into camp, and it's pretty much a similar situation as my very first season. My first year, because we had a new game crew, a new anthem singer in Toronto, and we had new in-game hosts and hostesses. The Maple Leafs decided that they wanted us out there. They wanted to sort of get us some experience and working together and working with our crew. So I went out to Halifax and did my very first Maple Leafs game in Halifax, and also did a Maple Leafs alumni game while we were out there. So that was
both games.
Yeah, and that was a really cool experience for me. I mean, to sort of get started and to be on the road, and like, it was really exciting. The following two seasons, we were the training camp was in Niagara Falls, and they just used local folks for the one alumni game, and then we had the Kraft Hockeyville that happened as well. The NHL used local staff for those games as well, which was really cool. And so this year to have been asked to go out to Newfoundland, I'm really pumped. I've been to Newfoundland twice now in the last year. Last year for work, this year my wife and I were there for our 20th anniversary. We were there for 2 weeks just driving
Congratulations.
Around. Thank you. We spent 2 weeks driving around Newfoundland, and the one thing I know is there are great hockey fans in Newfoundland and big Maple Leaf fans. And
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
you go back to the long time affiliation there with the Baby Leafs in St. John's, and so it makes sense, especially with the arrival last year of the Growlers, the success that the Growlers had in the ECHL. It's a really cool move to have training camp in Newfoundland, and I'm just absolutely pumped that the Leafs have asked me to go out. So I'm going to be heading out there on Monday, the 16th of September. I'm announcing the game on the 17th, and then be heading back to Toronto on the 18th. So it's a quick trip, but it's one that I'm absolutely thrilled to be a part of.
Have you been screeched in yet when you're in Newfoundland?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did that last year. Yeah, this year I got my wife screeched in, so I am absolutely a card-carrying honorary Newfoundlander. Absolutely.
There you go. That is awesome.
Mike, you mentioned some of the people that you work with behind the scenes. You talked about Jimmy Holmstrom. I'm just wondering if there's any person in particular that like gets you excited knowing that you get to work with that person, or, you know, or someone that you want to shout out.
Well, you know, I think our entire staff is outstanding, and the proof of that is, number one, we've got an award-winning game presentation staff. That is undisputable because they've won major awards over the last several seasons. So they've got the hardware to prove it. But I also have the experience, and I mean, the two people that I work closest with are Jimmy Holmstrom, our organist, and Taylor Dean, who's our game presentation manager. And they're just the best in the business. I mean, with Taylor, she basically is what you would call the game director. She calls for everything that happens entertainment-wise off the ice. It's a tremendous responsibility. There's a lot of pressure involved. You've got to be really, you got to have a quick mind and be able to make split-second decisions almost without thinking. I mean, it really does have to be second nature, and she does a fantastic job. And I mean, the proof of that is the NHL constantly hires her for events like the All-Star Game, Winter Classics, and events like that. And, you know, if she were to ever leave the Maple Leafs for anything else, it would be a big loss for us and someone else's gain. And Jimmy's great just because, you know, we work in an industry where there are a lot of young folks, a lot of folks in their 20s and early 30s. And for Jimmy and I, you know, guy, I'm in my mid-40s. Jimmy's, you know, getting into his 60s. He's now retired after 33 years of teaching. We're just a couple of buddies, and we're just a couple of the old guys who somehow just sort of gravitated towards each other, and almost by necessity, just because, well, you know, we're the old guys in the group, and yet we've become really, really great friends. And it really, it started before my days with the Leafs, because I actually got into MLSE in 2015-2016 when I did the or 2014-2015 pardon me, when I did the World Junior Championship the first time it came to Toronto, and I was the announcer for the World Juniors. And because MLSE was a co-presenter along with Hockey Canada, that sort of opened the door for me and was my introduction to a lot of people at MLSE. And Jimmy's definitely one of them. And he immediately sort of took me under his wing and like I just was stuck to him for two weeks of the World Junior Tournament. And so when I came on board with the Maple Leafs, it was like old school week and old home week. And just finding my old pal Jimmy again, and we just immediately picked up where we left off, and we've become pretty close friends in both our love of the Maple Leafs, but also just, you know, our appreciation for each other and just admiration for each other's talents and you know what he's done musically in his career that so many people probably don't even know some of the names that he's musicians and singers that he's played with and for over the years. You know, guys like Tom Cochran, guys like Burton Cummings, Larry Gowan. I mean, some of the biggest names in Canadian music, and Jimmy knows them all, and Jimmy's played for them all. So I admire Jimmy for his love of the Maple Leafs, but I'm also a big fan of his musical talent and really, really, really happy to call him my friend.
Well, it's awesome to be able to work with someone that closely. You know, you're talking about all the staff. Getting everything set up, going through your game day, you know, doing all the announcing. Has there ever been a time where you felt maybe the timing was off just by, you know, a minute or a second or something like that, and it didn't go the way you wanted? And how do you compensate for something like that? How do you react on the fly? I know you're just speaking with others doing so. How do you do that on the fly there, Mike?
I think the biggest thing is, as difficult as it may sound, you can't dwell on something, you know? And I've had instances in, you know, over the years where an announcement hasn't gone the way I wanted it to, or, you know, there's been a mistake made, and you can't dwell on it. You gotta move on and not worry about it. Even though, I mean, in this day and age, you make a mistake, you get absolutely raked over the coals on social media. So if you have a thin skin, don't go on social media. That's the first thing. But I also realize that at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like in when you hear people talk about, you know, working for a cabinet position or whatever for a U.S. president. You know, I serve at the pleasure of the president. Well, I serve at the pleasure of the Maple Leafs, and as long as they're happy with my performance, you know, I'm going to be happy with my performance. So the biggest thing is everybody makes mistakes. The mistake that some people make is then is compounding that mistake by dwelling on it. And I try and just move on. It can be very hard. It can be really hard sometimes because you kind of, there's an embarrassment factor there. But thankfully it doesn't happen very often. And if it does, you know, I've learned how to sort of cope with it and move on.
On that topic, what preventative measures do you have in place to stop yourself from swearing into the microphone when the Montreal Canadiens score?
I'll tell you what, I way back early in my career, there was I'm not going to say where I worked, but I worked for a team in a different sport, and I was sort of the backup announcer, but I would also be the backup for other parts of the game presentation. So sometimes I did music, sometimes I did scoreboard, you know, I did different things. It was the minor leagues, and so things are, and this was back in the 90s, so things were nowhere near as structured as they are now as far as game presentation goes. And I witnessed an announcer who would say very inappropriate things around the microphone. And there are a couple of times where the microphone was hot and caught him saying these things, and he didn't quite notice it right away, and someone popped into the booth and said, the mic's on. So I learned very early that you never say anything around any microphone that you wouldn't say if it was on. So that was a real easy lesson for me way back, and thankfully it didn't happen to me. So I just learned to don't do it. Don't curse into a mic. Don't curse around a mic. Don't say anything inappropriate around a mic, because you just never know who's listening. You never know if the on button light is burnt out or not. And it can happen.
Yes.
And you don't want it to happen to you.
Yeah, my first year announcing in junior hockey, I got into a discussion with a player that was in the penalty box next to me, and my microphone was on. And the day after, I went out and I bought myself a microphone with a nice giant light, as you just said, so that I know when the microphone is on. But also, as you just said, it's much easier just to treat the mic like it's always hot, and then you don't have to worry so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because inevitably, I mean, you hit the off button and your finger slips and it doesn't shut off.
Yeah.
So I'm almost to the point of, you know, obsessingly looking down and checking that the mic is off when I'm sitting there. Because,
yes.
I mean, I'm watching the game. I'm cheering along with the fans too. So I don't want any of that going out over the loudspeaker. So, yeah, I'm looking over all the time, because you just never know if your finger slips or your elbow grazes that button or whatever. So, yeah, you better to be safe than sorry, as they say.
I mean, the two flip sides of that is that I've worked in press boxes next to the owners and GMs, and they get a little hot under the collar with the officials sometimes. So I have to be a little. I try to remind them that, hey, there's a live microphone right here. But
absolutely, yeah. I mean, back when I first moved to Toronto and was covering the Leafs, these were during the days of. John Ferguson Jr. As GM, and I my seat was right below where Fergie sat, and then that was also the booth where Brian Burke sat. Well, guess what? I mean, you could hear some real beauties coming out of there. Those guys were never shy about letting their thoughts be known. But you're right. If there was a hot mic anywhere near, that's the last thing that that you'd want going out. Thankfully, there were no microphones in and around that area because it could have been nasty. But I heard a lot of those, and you get them everywhere. I mean, I remember my first couple of seasons in the NHL. Billy Smith, the old goalie from the Islander dynasty. I think he was either an assistant coach or he was part of management with the Florida Panthers. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the Panthers. And I can remember him leaning out from his booth to yell at the officiating supervisor or the video replay guy in the next booth. And, oh, boy, if there'd been a hot mic then, I mean, my goodness, there might have been an indictment sent out or something because – Billy Smith was hot. But yeah, so you learn hopefully you learn that lesson early
yeah.
And through someone else's experience, not yours.
Well, one question I want to ask you that I didn't get to ask yet, speaking of instances and things that have happened, last season there was a lot that went on with the Toronto Maple Leafs with the, pregame ceremonies and different things like that. What one moment sticks out to you the most about last year and things you got to call and be a part of?
I think the one night that stands out, there are two nights that stand out to me every year. Hall of Fame night is always outstanding because it's really the first time that we're sort of acknowledging to the public and to the fans in the building, here is the Hall of Fame class, right? Like they do some smaller events during the day, but to the coast to coast, continental TV audience and 20,000 people in the building, that's one heck of a moment when you get to introduce the Hall of Fame class for that year. And there's always a large party of Hall of Famers who are there as a receiving line. So, to go through and introduce all these great names from the past is always exciting for me. The other one is it's sort of a personal thing. My grandfather is the guy who just gave me my love of hockey, gave me my love of the Leafs, and also gave me my appreciation for history, Canadian history, and along with my dad, gave me the appreciation for the Canadian military. My grandfather was a major in the Canadian Army, served in World War II, also served in a peacekeeping mission in Vietnam. My dad was a member of the Canadian Navy. And so I have a deep, deep appreciation for the military and what they do. And there's such a great history between the Canadian Forces and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So for me, Canadian Forces Night is always huge, but our Remembrance Day game, when we have our Remembrance Day ceremony and bring out veterans and introduce them to the crowd year after year, is always one that stands out for me for personal reasons. And it's just such an honor to be a part of those nights. I would say that where it gets difficult are the nights where we have to acknowledge something. I mean, Remembrance Day is a solemn occasion, but when we have to observe moments of silence for tragedies that are happening in the moment, I think of the Humboldt Broncos bus crash. I think of some of the mass shooting events that happened. I think of the van attack here in Toronto. These are all moments that I'm very proud that we recognize as a hockey club, and that we take time to honor victims of all these events. But from an announcer standpoint, I think those are probably the most difficult to do because
yep.
You want to respect the solemnity of the moment, and you want to make sure that you hit that right tone. you don't want to make a mistake, because I feel like it would be taking away from what that moment is about, and I don't want it to be at all about me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think back especially to the Broncos bus crash, and, you know, I mean, I'm kind of tearing up right now thinking about it, because it was a really tough one to do. And, you know, two things, you know, stand out for me from that night. And one was that I got through it, and someone sent me a note on Twitter and said, you know, great job. You could hear the tears in your voice. And that just absolutely struck me right in the heart, because it was such a sad moment, and it was at the same time a unifying moment for anybody involved in hockey in this country, but really for the country as a whole. And so to have had my own emotions, you try as much as you try not to have your emotions come into the equation, they did, but they did in the right way, which I was happy about, that I was able to convey just really what I think a lot of people were feeling at the time. But what was really heartbreaking for me was that about 5 minutes after I made that announcement, that moment of silence, I found out that an acquaintance of mine, someone that I just met, a young hockey player from out west, who I had met while doing some announcing at the Canadian Blind Hockey Championship, which happens every year in Toronto, he lost his brother in that bus crash, and I saw. He put out a tweet, and to this day, I don't know if I would have been able to do that moment of silence and finish it if I'd known that information prior to doing that announcement. Like, it was, it really hit me hard, and to see that, you know, this wasn't somebody that I knew. It was a brother of someone that I'd met and had spent a little bit of time with. But, you know what, it just sort of drove home that feeling of sadness that I think a lot of people involved in the game felt on that day and through many weeks afterwards. So yeah, not to be a downer or anything, but that was... you know, there's good moments, there's very cheerful moments, and there are other very, very, very serious moments that require you to be solemn and respectful, and sometimes, you know, while fighting your own emotions to get through it. And that was definitely one for me.
I can definitely relate, Mike. So I actually work in the CGHL, the OGHL of the CGHL that the Broncos play in. And I had to do, it was either three or four, I believe it was actually four, of those moments of silence, because I work for three different teams. And I was actually hired by a fourth team to come out to the Aurora Tigers to come out and do their moment of silence. And it let me tell you, it doesn't get easier. Even having to do, if anything, it gets harder having to do it like more than once. And then being able to go and see the Leafs tribute that you were a part of, just kind of tied that all together emotionally. So I know it's been I guess like almost, it's been more than 2 years now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And, I just think back to what the job that you did and how it made me feel better about the job that I did and how that all just, yeah. Anyways,
well, it's funny you say that, because I think we all sort of did that, right? I mean, we were all looking around the league and seeing how different teams approached it, and I think everybody did did their own thing, but everybody, all the ceremonies that I saw, I think they did the players and their the families of those players proud. And they were all handled differently. They all had their own sort of special wrinkle. But each and every one of them honored the players and the staff for the Broncos so tremendously well that that I was proud of how we handled it and proud to see how other people around the hockey world handled it for themselves.
Absolutely. Mike, I'm wondering, you know, me and James, we're aspiring to be great podcasters, great interviewers, journalists, whatever you want to call it. And I aspire to be, a professional PA announcer. I'm just wondering if you have any tips for anybody that's aspiring to get into the sporting world, be it radio, podcasting, or as an announcer for a hockey team, if you have any tips that you can offer them.
Well, I would say, my career has sort of defied the traditional route. Originally I was going to follow the path that most people told me I needed to follow to get into radio, which was go to a small market, start there and move on up. I got really lucky and I got my first break in my hometown. But I got that break after years of working at the radio station and plugging away and not turning down any opportunities. Just take every opportunity that comes your way. Don't get taken advantage of. I'm not saying that, but try not turn down opportunities because you don't know where those opportunities are going to lead. Conversely, try and make some opportunities. So for myself, I moved from Ottawa to Toronto in 2001. I didn't do any announcing for 9 years. And then through my contact from my OHL days, I managed to start doing a few games a year, but still nothing regular. There were no announcing jobs in the Toronto area that had opened up. And when I heard that the World Juniors were coming to Toronto, I knew that they always had a French language and an English language announcer at World Junior tournaments when they're held in Canada. Excuse me. So knowing that, I took a shot thinking that maybe there aren't that many bilingual announcers in the Toronto area. So I called up Hockey Canada and I asked if they were doing any auditions, and they had no clue who I was. I was not on their radar, but they said, yes, absolutely. And I got an audition. They heard me, saw that I was absolutely fluent in both languages, and I got the gig. And that was my introduction to Taylor Dean, who's my boss now with the Maple Leafs. It was my introduction to Jimmy. It was my introduction to a lot of the people who would be involved with the Maple Leafs and my hiring. So if I don't make that initial call to Hockey Canada in Calgary and make that inquiry, and I just sort of sit there waiting for that, an email saying, like a casting call or whatever, I may not be sitting here today. That one phone call potentially, was career changing for me. So there are times where you might be able to make your own breaks and take your shots. And I think it was Gretzky say, you can't score on the shots you don't take.
You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
And if I don't take that shot with Hockey Canada back in 2014, I don't think I'm sitting here today announcing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So those are probably the two biggest things I could say is get as many opportunities as you can. Don't turn them down if you don't have to. And sometimes don't be shy. Get out there and make your own breaks.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm a firm believer in what Elliot Friedman always says. He says, you never know who's watching or who's paying attention, but the right people are always watching and paying attention. So do your best work at all the times, and don't ever be afraid to hear no. It never hurts to ask, and never be afraid of hearing no.
Yeah, those are great points, and I mean, I've lived them. I mean, Elliot speaks the truth there. When I did that first World Juniors, there was someone at that game, at one of those games, who we had a mutual friend, and that mutual friend was talking to this person and said, you went down to some games. Oh, my friend Mike was the PA announcer, and it just happened that this person who was at the game was the person leading the hiring team for PA announcers for the Pan Am Games, which were happening in Toronto in 2015. And so the message got back to me, get in touch with this person. They'd like to talk to you about potentially doing some announcing for the Pan Am Games. So you're right, and Elliot's right. You don't know who might be in that crowd, who might be listening on the radio or watching on TV, and liking what you're doing. So do your best at all times, and always assume that there's somebody out there that hasn't heard you yet and is hopefully going to like what you're doing.
Well, the last thing we want to touch on with you, Mike, before we let you go this evening, is obviously everybody wants to know, you get to call the Maple Leafs games, you get to announce the goals, you get to have one of the funnest jobs in the toy store, so to speak. What do you think the Maple Leafs are going to do this season, and what do you feel the ultimate outcome for this squad will be?
I never, ever, ever make predictions simply because I never want the tape to come back and haunt me. 10 months from now, I've been down that road. We used to do predictions on NHL Network Radio, and then Mick Kern, my buddy, would play back the predictions 10 months later. And it's just horrible and embarrassing. All I know is, based on the 3 years that I've watched these guys, they're super exciting to watch. They're fast. It's high octane hockey. Frederick Anderson is an outstanding goaltender, and I can honestly say that almost every single night that I am at Scotiabank Arena and that I've been at Scotiabank Arena, even games where we've lost, you've gone home a happy fan and at least an entertained fan. I think you can expect a lot more of that. And that's certainly what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, but you can't trick me. If we end up playing Boston in the first round again, I know you're going to be pulling your hair out.
I don't have any hair left, so it's not an issue for me anymore. I've had a nice big bald head now for many, many, many years.
That's the trick.
And I'll tell you what, if by some twist of fate, the Maple Leafs were to play the Boston Bruins again in round one of the playoffs. I mean, we talked about it earlier. Rivalry breeds, passion and contempt. And if you meet the same team in the playoffs for a third consecutive year, that would be, I think, just fireworks. And it might actually be hard to maintain my composure during games. But I know the fans would definitely be entertained if that happened.
I thought you were going to say that you have to walk by Freddie as he's going out to the ice. I thought that's where you were going to go to if you end up playing it again to get those superstitions going. I thought that's where you were going with that one.
I think there are times, over the last couple of seasons where I may have wanted to walk by Brad Marchand before a game, but expecting a different outcome. But that's another discussion for another day.
Careful. He likes to get close to people.
I've heard. I've witnessed, yes.
Well, Mike, it has been awesome yet again to sit down with you and talk. We look forward to speaking with you again. Have a great season this year. We look forward to your call. And do you have any projects or anything coming up that you'd like to let everybody know about?
Well, as always, I'm involved with Accessible Media Inc. that folks can learn more about by going to AMI.ca, and that is TV and audio broadcasting company that really specializes in broadcasting for people who are blind or partially sighted, and certainly always being advocates for people living with disabilities. And they've been at the forefront of the development of described video on television, and now a live description as well for sports, and integrated description is the sort of the next frontier that AMI has really led the way on. So I'm really blessed to be involved with them, and it's just great to be able to go to work every day and be able to create media and create programming and content that really makes a difference. You know, people tell you makes a difference in their lives, and really gives you a real sense of purpose. AMI came into my life after NHL Network Radio, and I was very lucky to be given the opportunity to get involved with them, and we've successfully launched a radio show and a national television show. So that continues. That work continues into a fourth season now as well with them. So it's pretty exciting times on both the hockey and broadcasting side of things for me. So I'm looking forward to the next several months, both at Scotiabank and at AMI. So AMI.ca, if people want to learn more about it, there's podcasts available for all the shows there, including the one that I'm on, which is called Live from Studio 5. And you can go to AMI.ca/podcasting for details on how to listen to all the various shows that are produced and put together by AMI.
Awesome.
Awesome, Mike. Well, thank you so very much for stopping by and giving us some of your time. And enjoy Newfoundland, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Always a pleasure.
Go Leafs, go.
You bet.